How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
That's different. That's not your typical hair salon or typical dental clinic. What makes it different is that we really try to draw your attention into the space and kind of create these moments where there's focal points, and it's not just about the service that's being done inside. It's like, it looks like a good space and a great space that you want to be in. How do we kind of mimic that space of home, creating that feeling that you're walking into a space that is very familiar to yourself versus walking into a space with kind of rolls of vinyl on the floor that seem, again, very sterile. What we also bring to the table is our interior design skills to kind of understand materials, not just building permits, which architects are great at, but we kind of bring that further layer of what makes a space in terms of the finer details.
Yeah, this is a tale, a tale, oh yeah, a tale of two hygienists. So there might be only one, bringing the best of dental knowledge, and we do it all with ease. We cover oral health and screening and preventing gum disease. We're gonna do a lot of learning and have a little bit of fun working at the dentist. A tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to episode number 360 of A Tale of Two Hygienists podcast, an Endeavor Business Media production. I'm your host, Andrew Johnston, and thank you so much for downloading the show and giving us your time today. We're not going to let you down because this episode we're featuring an architect. Ooh, right? Like, this is different. We have Derek Lai on, and he's going to walk us through some of our offices, some of the layouts. He's going to point out the things that we need to be aware of in regards to layout and design and space and all of the things about the office. And you're thinking, Andrew, why is this important? Well, here's the thing. Sometimes we just go into our offices and we just exist in them, right? But there's a way to make us happier in that space, in that environment. And the same thing goes with our patients. We want our patients to have an amazing experience. And sometimes the layout and the design can have an impact on that. And so he has some amazing tips. I know that you're going to really love this one. Also, an interesting thing, I know we talked about this on the episode in a few minutes, but he does talk a little bit about how maybe this could be a side hustle. And you're not going to have the experience or the education as an architect does. But maybe for those of you looking, if you have an eye for design and color palettes and all, I don't know, actually know the other terms, but if this is something that you're interested in, is maybe going and finding someone like Derek and going to work on his team. Because I feel like that would be something that might fulfill you in a different way, that you could still be a practicing clinician and get that warm, fuzzy feel that you need for yourself. So anyways, I'm rambling, but I think this is really good. I really like this episode. Next week, we have another great episode. It's a roundtable. I love that we do roundtables. It's the first episode of every month, and it has one of my favorite people on there, Amber Lovatos, but we also have a newer acquaintance. So we're going to welcome in also Anchi Doe with co-host Erica Flateau on that episode. And we talk a little bit about their journey into speaking and what that's been like for them. It's a very often requested topic. And so I'm excited for you to hear their opinion next week on that one. November. Wow. Super interesting month this year. I felt different. I mean, November always has a certain feel to it. And I felt this one was a little bit different. I'm not really sure. Also, I'm still trying to figure out, I live in Florida now and it's sunshiny and warm and actually it's getting a little bit cold, but mostly warm. And November doesn't feel the same as it did in the Pacific Northwest. And so I wrote a little bit about all of these weird changes and things in a recap newsletter. So make sure that you head over to our website, atel2hygienist.com. Sign up for that newsletter if you haven't already signed up for it. I feel like as far as newsletters go, I'm signed up for a ton of them. I feel like we do a good job of not spamming anyone with things that you don't care about. We keep our newsletters very straightforward. So don't be shy about signing up for it again, atel2hygienist.com, and sign up for that so that you can hear the recaps and the episodes that you might have missed. And I think one of the last things, over the next few weeks, I'll be getting you some more information about these new shows that we have launching. It's going to be the RDH Magazine podcast from Endeavor Business Media as well. It's shaping up so far to be a really great and interesting format. And so when we have more details, I'll be happy to share those with you. I want you to subscribe to that show as well, but I will give you more information when it's up and ready and when the trailer is ready for you. So I think that's it for me. Stay warm, everyone, and enjoy this episode with Derek Lai.
A tale of two hygienists.
Hey, friends. Quick pause in the show to remind you about the CE offered for several of our episodes. All you have to do is click into the show notes and follow the link to the CE Zoom website. Answer a few of those questions about the episode correctly, and you'll be rewarded the appropriate amount of CEUs. This wouldn't be possible without a partnership with our friends at TempStars. TempStars is more than just a temp and a placement service. They are clinician-led and education-focused and strive to perfectly match individuals and dental offices. Learn more about TempStars.com or go back and listen to some of their tip episodes. They are absolutely worth the listen. And now, back to the show. All right, listeners, welcome to the interview portion of the podcast. Very excited today. It's always fun, I think, to have a non-dental professional on there because it bridges so many other communities. And so co-hosting with me, I know I mentioned it in the intro, but I have Bethany co-hosting with me, so we're really excited about this. And we have Derek Lai on for the interview. Derek, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Andrew. It's great to meet you, you and Bethany. I've listened to so many podcasts over the pandemic. I'm so excited to be part of one myself.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So how many podcasts have you done? Is this your first one as a guest?
This is the first one. Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. This is the way to do it. I think we're going to ease you in. We're the nice host. We're not gotcha journalism or anything hard, and it'll be great. You're going to do wonderful. Awesome.
Wonderful. I'm happy.
Okay. So Derek, here's the thing. So today, what we're going to be talking about is, I guess, architecture and dentistry and office design and some other things. And I guess, you know, maybe if you could start us off with, like, who are you? What's your background, including some of the education? Because for us, like, we don't really maybe understand other professions' educational pathways.
Yeah, talking about how I became an architect and how I got into designing a dental clinic, I'll kind of walk through how I got to this point. Trained 4 years in education in an undergrad, and then had to do about 2.5 to 3 years doing a master's, and then a whole bunch of exams, and then internship. I think all in all, about 10 to 11 years of training, exams, and internship. Could really become a doctor at this point, but really, my passion is architecture, design, and helping others through you know, making great spaces. That's what I love to do. And, you know, I've always wanted to become an architect as a kid, and I never thought I would ever design a dental clinic. All architects think they'll design major buildings, houses for wealthy people. And I never thought that my path would lead to where I am now, designing a lot of dental clinics and being sought after to design dental clinics. How that came to happen is there was a dentist one day who was eating across from a hair salon that we designed. And she was like, I want them, whoever did this place, to design our dental clinic. And it was chance, really, luck, chance, however it is. And she called me, she hunted me down basically, and found that we did this hair salon. So it was great. And then, so she's like, can you help me design a dental clinic? I'm starting off my first practice, and my husband and I are looking to open up a new dental clinic. And she sounded very sure that she wanted us to do it. And I was like, I've never done this before. Are you sure? Are you confident that we could do this for you? And she didn't have much doubt. And I doubted myself at first. I was like, I've never done this before, but we know we're trained for this. We're trained to be put into situations where we've never designed a museum before. You had to go in to do that, and you kind of do your research. Try to figure out basically what makes a dental clinic good or what makes a hair salon good. You kind of have to put yourself into your shoes as hygienists, as dentists, and as patients to kind of create a good space. Really, it's having to do with empathy and understanding of how you move through spaces, how you feel in spaces. So that's kind of how we got into what we're doing now.
Do you feel like when she saw that hair salon, she's like, this is a great use of space? Or was it the aesthetics? And she's like, that was beautifully put together, like finishing touches.
It has to, yeah, I think it has to do with a combination of both that she saw that hair salon at first. It really stood out. It really caught your eye. She was looking to create a place that catches your eye, that you walk past and that you'll turn your head to be like, hey, that's different. That's not your typical hair salon or typical dental clinic. What makes it different is that we really try to draw your attention into the space and kind of create these moments where there's focal points and it's not just about the service that's being done inside. It's like, it looks like a good space and a great space that you'd want to be in.
So kind of building off of that, can we talk a little bit about dental clinics specifically? I want to talk about kind of the embarrassing or the ridiculousness that was the creation of dental clinics in years past, and then kind of what we're moving into now. Because I bet you've seen some really terrible design.
Yes, this is something I'm very excited to talk about. I'm actually like quite passionate. Now that I've done so many, I'm quite passionate about ones that are not good and what make them not great. Or like, why did I have dental anxiety as a kid and growing up until I started doing them? Because you see a lot of vinyl plastered smiles on front windows and doors that you can't even see inside. And I think a lot of people have that kind of vision in their minds from media, from growing up, what this looks like and what it should look like. But we're kind of trying to change that and kind of make it more inviting, more of a space that you want to be in, and kind of reduce that anxiety that you may have had, because a lot of people have dental anxiety. Looking at that statistics that we've been told, that 50 to 80% have some degree of dental anxiety, and seeing a dentist where there was some sort of kind of experience you've had as a kid and you kind of bring that forward. And we're really trying to reduce that clinical feel within a dental clinic, because I think that's also a very typical image that people have in their minds. Everything is very sterile. It's white.
Which, as professionals, we want that, yes. Right? Like, we're trying to project
you want
cleanliness.
That. Absolutely.
We know what we're doing, guys, but...
Completely. And you want to balance those two things of, like, you want to project you're super clean, especially during COVID and all that. Everything had to be cleaned off, separated off, well ventilated, basically white surfaces where you could not see, you know, specks and things like that. But going back to why that kind of balance is really important is that people don't want to feel like they're in like a white, cold space where they're kind of going in for surgery or something like that. People want to kind of feel welcome in the space. This goes for most clinics, doctor's offices and all of that. Really, I think that there's something that does need to change there. But I feel like dentists right now are taking that on and kind of reinventing themselves as a more friendly, more welcoming place to be in.
Can I ask, okay, so let's say I'm a dentist, I have my practice, and I'm like, look, I'm not doing a remodel.
Right.
What are some like really basic things that I could do to make that patient feel more welcome that's pretty cost effective?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that we could do if we're kind of redoing a space and we're not building it from scratch. A lot of it has to do with lighting. Some are aware that lighting, and when you buy lighting, a lot of the packaging says like warm white, bright white, cool white. So there's this range of color temperature for lighting that's in a space. So what we try to convey to our dentists that we work with is that a warmer color temperature is really helpful for patients to kind of feel calmer and to feel more relaxed and more at home. We do know that when they're doing their treatments or whatnot, you need a really white light, like a really daylight, bright light. And that's something called like something above 4,000 K lighting temperatures. We also understand that the dentists and hygienists, they have a light that they use for tasks. That's it's on the chair, it's on the foreheads, and that's the really bright kind of daylight light to see clearly what needs to be done and the different teeth shades and that, right? So we advocate to kind of have warm, comfortable light, because right off the bat, that will make a huge difference in feeling clinical versus feeling comfortable and more relaxed. That would be one of the simpler changes. We had a client of ours, a dental clinic, and by mistake, the contractor installed all 4,000 K light temperature bulbs in this way. He's like, I don't like this. This does not feel right. Everything felt so off from what he had before. And we had to, unfortunately, have the contractor replace all the lights to 3,000 K, which made a huge difference, because when you're having bright daylight lights reflecting off of bright white walls, it feels very uncomfortable. So that's one change that could be done to make someone feel more welcome in the space. Second one is potentially materials that you use in a space. Our client is really into greenery, plants. I know we can't have these in ops or treatment rooms or hygiene rooms because soil is not something that's allowed in the clean spaces, but we incorporate artwork, you know, color into spaces that just kind of make it feel more friendly. Green walls is one thing as well that we're seeing being done as well these days.
Can we talk about artwork for a minute?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you mentioned it, so I want to talk about it. Because, Bethany, how many times have you seen like that same smile in whatever demographic, right? Like on every
Photos.
Yeah, the stock photos. So how can, again, maybe I'm like projecting too much for the dentist already, but I want to be cost effective here. How can I make sure that, you know, my office or, you know, my best friend doctor office, that they are getting what we want for the patient to feel welcome, to feel, you know, cared for, but also to not have the same thing that everyone else has or that we've been seeing for decades.
Right. I'd say stop with the stock photos. It has to stop here.
Spend, but they're so cheap.
Spend a bit of time, just a bit of time. It doesn't take that long. I mean, these days there's so many poster print stores that are so cost effective that it makes sense just to look up what's happening these days in the art industry and what's popular, what, you know, kind of pick a theme and kind of run with it that way, whether it's like organic shapes and things like that, or plants, or just things that make you happy, right? As a staff yourself picking those photos, or as a dentist, what makes you feel better? It's likely not these stock photos. These smiling people are not, I don't know what the message is to, but if you have a bunch of smiling people around you, it makes you feel a bit eerie, doesn't it? Why are they so happy?
It does. Yeah, exactly. Also makes me feel a little bit judged too. I'm like, oh, right. Look how beautiful your teeth are.
Yeah, exactly.
My teeth aren't quite there yet, you know.
So, yeah, that's definitely one way to go about it.
Have you heard or read anything about maybe outdoor spaces, that kind of imagery being a little bit more calming and welcoming than indoor spaces, or like you mentioned, shapes or color patterns or anything that's a little bit better than another for art?
There's no one specific way. It could be a whole range of different artwork as well. It could be just graphical. Like right now, I'm just looking at one of the ones that we've done before. There's just a picture of a sun combing its hair. It's just hubris as well, right? You just want to go to that, like, kind of inviting, and kind of humor is a great way to kind of calm people down as well, right? And just things that are beautiful and that you want to look at, versus you don't want to look at smiling people because it's, I mean, that's kind of been done. We're now like, there's also community artwork that you can incorporate into your clinic as well. We've had a dentist reach out to her neighborhood saying, you know, whoever, you know, wants to use this kind of front space to have their artwork, they can discuss that and kind of have it kind of switch out over time as well. So that's one another way of having artwork.
I saw one of my dentist friends in New York City. She, similar to that, she reached out to the community, and I think, and I'm not in the art world, I can't remember what it is, but it's like a non-commissioned, like they sell it for the artist, but they don't take any commission on it. So if any of their patients come in, they're like, oh, that's a beautiful piece, I would like that. That's how they're kind of getting the community involved to put So, and then the artwork's going to be changing all the time because people are going to be buying the art pieces. And
I
thought that was like, that was an incredible idea. It's so smart. I did take us off course a little bit and I'm so sorry, but I do want to get back to like, what are the mistakes of yesteryear? What design faux pas were just hip and cool that are just dumb?
I feel that a lot of, in terms of materials inside a clinic, I think definitely needs an update on flooring. Well, the vinyl flooring that you'll see in most dental clinics and the older ones potentially that we can definitely make into a nicer space using tile potentially. A lot of the ones that we're doing right now is how do we kind of mimic that space of home, creating that feeling that you're walking into a space that is very familiar to yourself versus walking into a space with kind of rolls of vinyl on the floor that seem, again, very sterile. We're doing herringbone floors these days. It's kind of things that are quite timeless and will kind of last a long time visually. So yeah, there's that type of faux pas. I think that a lot of the traditional materials, again, we don't have to always pick the most sterile or the ones that have just been typically used in a clinic setting.
I've seen lots of carpet still in some operatories. I'll be honest about that. And I don't know if that's like a US thing versus a Canadian thing, right? From like the 70s and they have little microfiber carpet or whatever, but it's like, it's so disgusting. You can't clean that. It's like that soil you mentioned earlier. It's like,
Interesting. Oh. Yeah. So if I saw carpet, I think I'd just walk out. I don't think I would be sitting down there. But I think another thing is sound. Really important to patients, staff alike, is how does it sound inside, right? And carpet, I believe, would have been one way to mitigate sound and to kind of absorb that. So that might have been done then. But there's a lot of ways to install acoustic panels on the walls or ceilings to kind of absorb that reflection of sound, because you really don't really want to hear the patient next to you screaming or like the sounds of drilling or like those sounds kind of, if they can be contained as best as they can, that would be great. I like going to my dentist. We get headphones and we watch Netflix, so we really don't hear anything else other than what's on the headphones.
There's this dentist out of, I think, Michigan, Minnesota, one of those places, and he does a lot of VR, like Oculus or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're seeing like beautiful, and they can look all around, see like the fish swimming, or they can do like really calming things as well. So
that's great.
I'll send you the link to that a little bit later if you want to pass that on to your clients. But I think it's, you're right. It's genius having, you know, something that can dampen the sound that, or take your attention onto and put it onto something else.
Exactly.
I kind of want to get back to the whole US thing though, real quick. So your clients are based in Canada, right?
Yes.
Have you heard or have you seen anything like difference between like Canadian offices versus US offices?
I haven't seen anything different in terms of in Canada versus the US. No, I think it's pretty similar across the board. But what I have been seeing is open offices versus closed offices. And open in terms
of the operatories.
Right.
Being completely closed off versus. Like a door swings closed and closes it off?
Okay. Like during COVID and all that, there were regulations that we had to have ceilings, we had to have walls, we had to have closed doors. Even there's a lot of dental clinics that were completely open and that had to put up tarps and things like that during that time. And kind of dentists are now kind of aware of that and kind of keeping that in mind now to do that right away versus having to add those things later on potentially. So the open plan is, I think that was a big idea that a lot of dentists were adopting, but I think they're going back now to more closed spaces.
I mean, it's a terrible idea to have an open plan. Mm-hmm. Like you know, someone who's practicing, I'm like, I don't want to be distracted by the noises that are over here. I'm talking about like infection control issues. We're talking about from a standpoint of connecting with my patient. Like, look, I'm here for you. I don't want to be distracted. I don't want to hear, you know, Bethany's conversation, you know, about her trip to the Dominican Republic.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
All right. Let's circle back to this. So can you take us through the different phases? And we'll assume that this is either going to be a brand new build or a like complete gut and renovation. Because I would assume that there are phases of, you know, planning, drawing. I'm sorry. I don't know. This world. Permits that need to be pulled.
Yeah.
construction? Like, can you go phase by phase? What order do we do things in?
Okay, so let's start with the dentist is getting a brand new space and is kind of working to get a lease. So we like to be engaged at that point to kind of help the dentist figure out, is this the right space for you? What are you talking about in terms of your lease? And then we go into, once they've kind of finalized their lease and they have the space, there's like schematic design and kind of getting the concepts, what their vision is for the space. How do they want people to feel? What is the look they're kind of going for? And then we go into drawings for building permit, and then we go into drawings for construction. And then finally, construction itself. And then we kind of go through all of this process together with them to make sure things are being done correctly and things are being done right. What I do hear from the industry itself is that a lot of dentists will go directly to dental equipment suppliers to kind of get from point A to point B. That's
super common. Yeah.
Very common. We're here now to change that a little bit, to kind of put a little bit more thought into the design aspects of it, because we do see how from going from start to finish with a dental equipment supplier, it's a very traditional process. It's a very streamlined process. But we have heard from our dentists who've gone through that process is that they had to do a lot of the decisions. They had to kind of figure things out as they go on their own with a contractor, nobody else in between. And that was a really stressful process. And some tell me that they would never do that again because they didn't get what they wanted. Not only that, they probably paid a lot as well. And they were very stressed through that process.
So what groups do you work with then if you're not working with a dental supply company? And I'm assuming you're getting cabinetry and all sorts of other things. How do you acquire your stuff?
So we do work with dental equipment companies. They provide all the drawings in terms of the equipment. They provide the kind of electrical for the equipment specifically. So we do everything else that is beyond the equipment scope. We will design the cabinetry. We will design receptionist desks. We will kind of figure out all the electrical and power switching, finishes, fixtures, plumbing, lighting, all those. Whereas the dental equipment supplier will leave that a lot of the times, I feel, to the contractor to kind of figure out with the dentist. So a lot of that work gets kind of left behind versus you'll have a space to work out of. It won't be the prettiest, but it'll be, you can start
functional.
It's functional, right? It's functional and it works and you can start, you know, bringing patients in and things like that. So,
yeah. So Bethany, I'm sorry to like just railroad this whole entire conversation. Do you have any thoughts or questions at this point? You're good?
No, I mean, a lot of what Derek is sharing is kind of, it's relevant for me because the practice that I work in, we just went through all this stuff. Like I work for a dentist who specializes in sleep and TMJ, and he was renting a small space out of an existing dental office, but the business was growing enough to where we were able to move into our own space. And so all of the steps, I mean, we went through finding a space and he had hired an architect, went through the design process. But then at the very last moment, the lease went out and they ended up choosing a different person. And so then he was back at square one trying to find a new space and starting all over. Oh. So it took us about a year and a half to find a space and to design it and furnish it. And we just moved in July. So the process can be very tiring and very time consuming, especially with COVID now, you know, like it's hard to find supplies and it's hard to find labor and it's tough.
Right. Absolutely. And I totally sympathize with you through going through that process because if you haven't done a renovation before, there's a lot of learning that needs to be done and a lot go through it without help from professionals, architects or whatnot. You had an architect, which is great to kind of guide you through that process. What we also bring to the table is our kind of interior design skills to kind of understand materials, not just building permits, which architects are great at, but we kind of bring that further layer of what makes a space in terms of the finer details, what kind of seating, what kind of paint colors, what kind of laminate materials on cabinets will help everything tie together and make the space kind of as a whole. and feel kind of comfortable for patients.
Some of your before and after pictures, by the way, are amazing.
Oh,
I was looking, I was snooping through your guys' website. I'm like, ooh, yeah, that's beautiful. That was a good transformation right there.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I think what we're really trying to do is engage people on the street when they walk past, really to kind of change the perception of what a dental clinic should be. And I feel like even though I never thought of as a kid that I would be doing this or designing this, I feel that I'm making an impact to change lives and how people can be more, they'll have less anxiety to go to a dentist. Because I know that I've changed my own after doing this and going through this process. And from the dentists, what they're telling me and what their patients and staff are saying about what they have now, it's well worth their investment to have done this with us or with any design professional to kind of go through that process. It may cost a bit more, but we do also help save costs as well during construction and value engineering and things like that. We want to really change what this A to B path was, and still for a lot, it still is. I'd say 80-90% of dental clinics are still being built this way, but we're really trying to kind of rebalance that and to make it more appealing to people to go visit your dentist and see your hygienist.
I love it. I love it. So if they wanted to check out some of your work, and maybe if there's a dentist that was looking for, you know, an architect to hire, where can they go to find you guys?
So we're called Prop Architecture. We're based in Toronto, and we've actually been reached out by a lot of Americans, and I really want as well to help. Unfortunately, my insurance and my lawyers say it's better probably not to. So we kind of still stick within Canada. Most of our work is here, local. But if we are starting something or renovating or thinking to do something with the dental clinic, it doesn't hurt to reach out to your local architect or interior designer. Find somebody passionate about what they do and looking to help you make a change in that.
I love it. Derek, thank you so much for being on. Appreciate it.
No problem. I'm so happy to be on here. It's great talking to both of you.
Yeah, this is a tale, oh yeah. A tale of two hygienists. So there might be only one, bringing the best of dental knowledge, and we do it all with ease. We cover oral health and screening, and preventing gum disease. We're gonna do a lot of learning, and have a little bit of fun working at the dentist. A tale of two hygienists.